Our next case for oral argument this morning is number 043965, Jinglong Chen against the Attorney General. Good morning, Mr. Zhang.
Good morning, Your Honors. May I please the court? My name is Yongbin Zhang. I represent Mr. Jinglong Chen, petitioner in this petition for review. Petitioner is a Chinese national who has sought asylum, withholding of removal, and protection under the Convention Against Torture from the U.S. government. Petitioner is a petition for review of the immigration judge's decision, that is, the adverse credibility finding made by the immigration judge adopted by the Board of Immigration Appeals. We argue that that adverse credibility determination is not supported by the substantial evidence. There are three issues in this case. First, whether the omission of arrest and detention in petitioner's first asylum application, which was filed in 1993, under the circumstances petitioner explained, supports the adverse credibility finding, and whether the petitioner's whether the immigration judge's rejection of petitioner's explanation is supported by the substantial evidence.
Now, Mr. Zhang, Mr. Chen's testimony was inconsistent in a number of respects with his original application for asylum. Why was it not reasonable for the immigration judge to discredit Mr. Chen's testimony based on that inconsistency? When Mr. Chen signed the original application, was he not vouching for the accuracy and completeness of that application?
Well, Judge, I believe during the individual hearing, Mr. Chen testified that when he signed the first asylum application, he did not know the contents of that asylum application. That asylum application was totally in English. Mr. Chen at that time was only 18 years old. He just came to the United States. He is a Chinese national. He did not understand any English.
But don't we typically presume in the law that when someone places her signature, his signature on a document, that he has read and understood that document?
Well, Judge, I believe you can make that presumption under the circumstances the person signing that document understands the language of that document. But here, a petitioner is a Chinese national. He did not understand English.
But here we have to look at this globally. Couldn't virtually any non-English speaking asylum applicant claim that he didn't really understand what was said in a written application that was prepared by someone else on his behalf? What is the limiting principle here?
Judge, I think you should review the circumstances. Like in this case, there are two asylum applications. The second asylum application, petitioner did present a statement in his native language, that is Chinese, and there's a translation attached to that statement and attached to the asylum application. But in the first asylum application, there is a statement, but that statement's in English. It's one page of English document. And the immigration judge is presuming that petitioner understand the contents of that statement when he made the adverse credibility finding. And the immigration judge did not consider into the factor that petitioner was was a non-English speaker, and he just came to the United States, and the immigration judge even did not consider for what purpose respondent was signing that document. So I think in this case, the court can compare the two asylum applications. And actually, at the beginning of the individual hearing, the immigration judge, when the immigration judge sworn the petitioner in this case, the immigration judge used the second asylum application. And the judge asked a line of questions to petitioners regarding the second asylum application, ask him whether you know your attorney explained this contents with you, do you understand the contents of this asylum application, and petitioner answered positively, and then immigration judge sworn respondent petitioner and start the testimony. Well, also, I think let me get back to my argument. I think that the adverse credibility determination by the IJ is not supported by the precedents in this circuit. There are two cases on point in this case. First is Pop versus INS. Second is Conadru versus INS. Both in those two cases, the court has upheld adverse credibility finding, but those two cases are not applicable here because, first, in Pop versus INS, Pop had three opportunities before the in-court testimony to raise the questioned incident, a question of omission of his being beaten. He had three opportunities, but he didn't do it until at the very last hearing. But here, respondent's first asylum application did disclose that he was arrested, and the second asylum application provided a detailed elaboration to that incident. And also, a petitioner testified consistently with the second asylum application. Therefore, I think that Pop versus INS is not applicable. The second case is Conadru versus INS. That case involved Conadru's failure to testify in court a critical incident that he included in his written affidavit. And he failed to do this even after his attorney tried to get him to testify to that effect. And when questioned by the court why he failed to testify, he simply stated that my attorney did not ask me. Well, at this case, at instance case, a petitioner testified consistently with the second asylum application, and he did provide an explanation to the omission of the omission of the incident in the first asylum application. I see my time is up.
That simply means you're into your rebuttal time.
Okay. And also, there are, I think the immigration judge failed to consider the corroborative evidence in this case. There are three pieces of evidence. First is letter from petitioner's fellow practitioner, religious practitioner in China, and his pastor in China, and also a letter from the United States, a letter from petitioner pastor in the United States. And when the immigration judge made the determination of the case, he failed to consider this evidence. And I will just save my time for the rebuttal.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
We'll hear now from Mr. Fredericks.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
May it please the Court. I'm James Fredericks, appearing on behalf of the Attorney General. Unfortunately, I have to begin with admitting a mistake in the government's brief. We indicated at least several times that this was a board's opinion without, or a board decision without an opinion. In fact, there was a brief opinion. It indicated they were reviewing the IJ's credibility determination for clear error, and they found no error. And to the extent it had any analysis, it was restricted to the significant difference between the two applications. The lesson, I think, of the court's decisions in Pop and Cornejew, which makes them very applicable, although they're not identical on facts, is that we can expect someone to relay the most invasive or the most serious events, or the events that are the impetus for them coming to the United States. In this case, in the 1993 asylum application, Mr. Chen provided quite a few details about what had happened to him in China, how he had a spiritual awakening, joined a secret Christian fellowship, and when the school authorities found out about this fellowship, they, in his words, made his school life a nightmare. They took away his religious books, and when he graduated, they wouldn't give him a diploma. This is what he complained about in that case. Mr. Chen, however, in 2001, didn't contradict in the sense of denying those facts, but his story was very inconsistent. It included the same elements of a spiritual awakening, joining a secret church, but in this case, it's not a matter of him having his school book or his religious books taken away, or a matter of his school life becoming a nightmare. Rather, it's the Chinese police coming and arresting him, bringing him down to the detention center, and torturing him, in his words, beyond recognition for several days. I think 6 days.
Of course, he did admit later on that, or his either he or his attorney, that beyond recognition wasn't quite correct, that it was, you know, different in Chinese and English. He basically withdrew the beyond recognition.
I mean, I think it's a figure of speech. I'm not sure how it was translated, but I think it's indisputable that what he was testifying to was severe physical abuse.
Well, but here's what I would be very interested in knowing Mr. Fredericks. What actual evidence is there in the record that supports the immigration judge's second and third reasons for discrediting Mr. Chen? In other words, that he wouldn't have been able to walk home after the beating, and that he would have sought medical attention, and that it was unlikely that his parents would have been able to scrape together $1,000 to get him out of the country. I mean, aren't those two reasons pure speculation on the IJ's part?
I think those are plausibility determinations. There are facts with respect to his family's resources, in particular that they're poor farmers. The fact that he put the trip together in a few days, I think 8 or 9 days, sounds implausible.
Yeah, but what actual evidence is there in the record? These are two of the four reasons that the IJ articulated for discrediting Mr. Chen's testimony.
There's no evidence in the extent that we have anyone that testifies about him limping or anything like that with respect to him walking home. It's a matter of the IJ's finding the story contrived or implausible. In effect, I think these are complementary reasons with what the board talked about, the discrepancy between the two applications.
The IJ concluded
it sounds invented.
See, the IJ thought that Mr. Chen's original application could not have been prepared without substantial input from Mr. Chen himself. But the application was written entirely in English. Mr. Chen didn't speak English in 1992. How can we know what input Mr. Chen actually had with respect to the contents of the petition? Many of the details in the original application are actually inconsistent with Mr. Chen's testimony, and wouldn't that undercut the notion that Mr. Chen was intimately involved with the wording of the original application? In other words, you can't have it both ways. You can't say, you know, he's intimately involved with this.
I don't think what we're saying is this was a long process and he provided every pertinent detail. That may be too much to expect given the language problems, but what we do expect is that when somebody's in this situation, that they will say the most invasive and the most severe and the reason they came here. And Mr. Chen, as testimony, admitted that he did not tell this agency about the arrest or the detention or the torture. So however closely they were related, he didn't relay that part. So that's not a result of any confusion in the translation or any misunderstanding. The only inconsistencies between the two applications are the obvious complete absence of any discussion of the severe abuse and some confusion about whether he got his diploma or not. And in fact, the stories on the diploma jive a little bit better, in fact, than the IJ described it. In the original application, he says they denied him a diploma, though he graduated. In the subsequent application, he said that because of his arrest, they wouldn't give him a diploma. So, in fact, they're very similar stories or accounts, except for this glaring omission. I want to add one additional point. Mr. Chen's attorney explained that his case is distinguishable from Pop and Cornejew because his testimony between his application, his subsequent application, and his testimony was consistent. There were several minor discrepancies between those two things, between the 2001 application and the testimony in 2002. The IJ didn't pick up on these or didn't comment on them because I think they are minor discrepancies that probably don't go to the heart of this case. But to claim that these two tales are perfectly consistent is inaccurate. In one, he says he was baptized before he discovered Pastor Lin's church, and therefore he just joined it. In the other, he said he joined the church, and shortly afterward, he was baptized. Likewise, in his affidavit, he says that we were publicly tried, but when he testified about the various events, there's no mention whatsoever of him being tried in any fashion.
See, I think that what we have here is perhaps somewhat subtle in that the IJ thought, you know, as I think I stated before, that Mr. Chen's original application couldn't have been prepared without substantial input from Mr. Chen himself. The IJ may have been wrong, but that's one of the, you know, reasons, one of the four reasons that were articulated. The IJ may have thought that he wouldn't have been able to walk home, that he would have sought medical attention. I mean, these are the reasons that were given, and that's what we have to look at in, you know, deciding whether or not the adverse credibility determinations can stand.
But the question isn't for this court whether he is right. The question is, does the record compel the conclusion that he had to believe Mr. Chen?
Right, and I've asked you what the actual evidence is, and you have told me none, or you have told us none.
The actual evidence on the inconsistency between these applications is obvious. There's various information which the IJ listed in his opinion that only Mr. Chen could have provided. However, the stories are completely different, except for the awakening to Christianity and the secret fellowship or the secret or the unofficial church. But the torture is completely absent. He admitted he didn't even tell the agency about the torture, and that's something that the IJ could reasonably expect him to tell. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
The court should deny Mr. Chen's petition.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fredericks. Mr. Zhang, you have a minute.
Okay, Your Honor, I just want to make 2 points. First, I think we should view this case, we should view petitioner's situation taking into consideration of the circumstances. He was within months coming to the United States. He did not understand English. He did not know the rules of this country. So he just picked up this agent, tried to file some application with the U.S. government. The record did not indicate what purpose he would do that. The record is not clear whether he was knowing he was applying asylum application when he signed that. This is the first point. Second point, I think the IJ's credibility finding regarding future persecution is also not supported by the substantial evidence. It's supported by the speculative opinion of his knowledge about China's legal system. That is, IJ did not think a petitioner is going to be persecuted. After 13 years, the case was tried, pastor was served the sentence, but we don't know what would happen. And I believe the country reports support petitioner's position that China is still pressing hardly on the private religious church.
Thank you, Mr. Zhang. Indeed, our thanks to both Mr. Zhang and to Mr. Fredericks for their fine presentations. The case will be